Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Thank you.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. Trying not to make as many mistakes, or at least as big of a mistake, as the Hawaii missile man. Still an unbelievable story. Brought to you by Burlington, we are. Hurry into your Burlington store and save on the hottest workout gear like tops and bottoms with mesh and lace-up details, plus sneakers, wireless headphones, too. Burlington style for everyone. Bernstein and Goff with Mark Grody in for Jason in an hour. I'm Danny Parkins. Spiegel will be back tomorrow. Our one-year anniversary show, because you didn't think we'd make it to one and we might not make it to two, is this Wednesday. So be listening. Campy, you've been in charge of a lot of the audio production. How's it coming? Are you what's your confidence level for Wednesday's show?
I'm excited. There's a couple things, at least one thing coming that you don't even know about that I'm going to try and just spring on everybody. So I'm excited for it.
Excellent. It's gonna be great. We're gonna do an extended Can't Do It. We're gonna do Pick a Player on that day instead of Thursday. I think Len Casper's coming down. Theo said he would call in. We talked to Theo at Cubs convention. We are pulling old stuff from the year, and you know, the Score celebrates 25 years of Chicago sports talk. We're celebrating one.
Which one's the bigger upset?
That's what I'm saying. Which did you think was less likely to happen? 1 year of Spiegel and Parkins or 25 years of the Score? When we talked to Theo at Cubs convention, he's like, man, you guys are really setting the bar pretty low for yourselves, huh? And we were like, well, yeah. Yeah, that's right. You should have seen what everybody else was setting the bar for us. We're clearing expectations, Theo. Thank you very little. So that's coming up on Wednesday. We hope that you listen, and we'll be at Bulls Warriors that night and doing some stuff in between. So if you're a fan of the show, be sure that you are with us for the whole show on Wednesday. We would very much appreciate it. I saw Bucky Brooks, I think it was the first person who said something to the effect of does the QB driven league narrative change if the Final Four features Foles, Keenum, Bortles, and Brady? What does that say about team building? Should execs start focusing their efforts on building squads that aren't completely dependent on the QB? Shrug emoji. Let's not argue the exception over the rule. Okay? And I want to discuss this with you guys at 312-644-6767 because the Bears have just invested heavily in the quarterback position. Offensive head coach, known as a quarterback developer, offensive-minded general manager from the Saints, trading up multiple picks to move up one spot to take a quarterback higher than ever before. So I started to see yesterday, well, if the defenses beat the QBs and Bortles can beat Roethlisberger and Keenum can beat Breeze, then you got to build your team. And defense wins championships, and it's about line play and 2 through 53 on the roster and all of that stuff. And I'm here to tell you that's nonsense. It's just nonsense. The Bears are not trying to win one Super Bowl. They are trying to win Super Bowls. They are trying to be a dynasty. And I know that that is laughable for a team coming off three straight last place finishes in 3 years under its last coach, but that's what they're trying to do. They're daring to be great. Bortles and the Jaguars won. They did not win because of Blake Bortles. They won in spite of Blake Bortles. You cannot tell me that you'd because Blake Bortles beat Ben Roethlisberger, therefore it makes sense to build your team how the Jaguars did around Blake Bortles than how the Steelers did around Ben Roethlisberger. Like, you cannot make that argument. Roethlisberger had been in the playoffs like half a dozen years. I'll bet on those QBs, because do it this way. Who's more likely to make it to the AFC Championship game next year, Bortles or Roethlisberger? Roethlisberger. Who's more likely to make it to the NFC Championship game next year, Breeze or Keenum? Breeze. Who's the favorite to win it this year? Brady. So this idea that, well, I mean, defenses and line play and control the game in the trenches doesn't mean that line play and controlling the game in the trenches isn't a good thing. Doesn't mean it's not something to aspire to. But dynasties throughout history have had Hall of Fame quarterbacks almost universally. Almost universally. So if you want a shot, that's what the Cubs are trying to do, right? The Cubs want to get into the playoffs, see how it breaks, have a shot at it. Got to have the best team over 162. If you want to be a team that every year has a shot, every single season, you've got to have a great quarterback. No team has a shot every year that doesn't have a great quarterback. Teams have come up and sniped one. Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, Joe Flacco. We know all of the examples. And maybe we'll add Case Keenum or Blake Bortles or whomever to that list. But also, in fairness, Case Keenum's been really, really good. Like, if Blake Bortles wins, add him to the list with Trent Dilfer. If Case Keenum wins, he's having a top 10 MVP season this year. Completing like 68% of his passes. So I wouldn't lump Keenum completely. Now, that would be a story. That'd be like if Alex Smith won a Super Bowl. Like, not a high-end talent, but good enough who found the perfect system and the perfect team and all that and was able to ride it to victory. But like my guess is if Case Keenum got brought back next year, Case Keenum and the Vikings would be good again next year. Right? Like that doesn't strike me that as that fluky because he's got a good offensive line, a coach who's about to become a head coach on the offensive side of the ball, and Pat Shurmur, who's a former head coach and a maximizer of quarterback talent, and two Pro Bowl caliber receivers and a good tight end. So, Keenum, to me, isn't as good of an example as Foles or Blake Bortles, who are below replacement level caliber players. But the Bears are trying to be a dynasty. And people, I think, are going to argue the exception over the rule. Having said all of that, it doesn't mean that what these other teams are doing cannot be instructive. Because sometimes your quarterback that you drafted at the top of the draft doesn't turn into being Brady or Rodgers or Wilson or Roethlisberger or any of the top guys. Obviously, right? Like, the math is in the critics' favor on that one. Most quarterbacks drafted, even at the top of the draft, do not become future Hall of Famers. Obvious statements for 500, Alex. So what do you do to support them, to maximize their talent, to get them to the highest level of their ability, where if you look at it as a binary proposition, like a have or a have not proposition, you either have a quarterback who's good enough to win a Super Bowl or you don't. And I would still say that Blake Bortles is not good enough, even though this defense is amazing and they're in the AFC title game. And I think that his numbers over a 4-year track record back that up. And Jacksonville is doing an incredible job of building their roster 2 through 53. I mean, everyone talks about Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Bouye and Calais Campbell and then Posluszny and Telvin Smith and Darius and every guy. There's like 8 good defensive players that they have on that team. Malik Jackson, like they have, their entire team is good on the defensive side of the ball. Then they've got a top 5 to 7 running back in the sport, and don't turn the ball over, run the football, have the best secondary in the NFL and a top 2 defense in the NFL. And play in a soft division this year, right? Deshaun Watson gets hurt. Andrew Luck gets hurt. Marcus Mariota battles injury all season long. Look, the Jaguars, if they win this year, win big. Win the AFC or win the Super Bowl. My guess is it will be the 1-year offshoot until they get better quarterback play than Blake Bortles. A lot of things aligned for them this year. No devastating injuries on defense. And the division opened up with quarterback play within their division. Great year for Jacksonville to go up and try to snipe one. And they still have to go through Pittsburgh and New England just to get there. So I don't think they got much of a shot, but I didn't think they had much of a shot yesterday. But the team that has a shot every year is Green Bay. Even though they only have their one, every single year, They're the favorites in the division before the season. Every single year, they're one of the 10 favorites on the board in Vegas to win the Super Bowl. And we've seen what the Packers are without Aaron Rodgers. They're awful. They are a bottom 5 to 10 talent roster in the NFL, 2 through 53. But because of that one guy, he raises everybody else up around you. So just because Keenum, Bortles, Foles are there doesn't mean that the most impactful thing in the sport still isn't Trubisky and the quarterback position in general.
And how much quicker would Ted Thompson have been out of his gig if Aaron Rodgers wasn't Aaron Rodgers? Because it feels like they've been taking DBs and pass rushers early for the last 5 years, and basically nobody has worked out. And you just saw it this year, like you said, when you don't have that guy covering everything else up, just how bad it was. And it was like the realization up there of, hey, maybe it's time for Ted Thompson to be reassigned. Just something not as impactful.
Right. And the Jaguar situation, again, they drafted Bortles 4 years ago. This is his fourth season. And just basically went and said, we're going to spend all of our resources on the defensive side of the ball. And they built him an amazing defense. And they did it in basically two off seasons, a little bit more than two off seasons. It shows you how quickly things can turn around. Trubisky just has to be in the have category, and then you can build the rest of the team. I'm not saying you win just because of quarterbacks. I think quarterback wins and the win-loss record and that sort of thing is most of the time a nonsensical argument, because it's the ultimate team game, more so than basketball, baseball, where you can isolate individual performance a lot easier. Putting wins and losses on a quarterback is ridiculous. But who's got more of an impact in the result of a game than any other position in sports? It's quarterback. This is an outlier scenario. You would agree with that, right? That Roethlisberger is more likely to be there than Bortles, and Breeze is more likely to be there than Keenum.
100%.
Right?
Yeah, unless everything just, for whatever reason, completely caves around, which would be unexpected.
Patriots dynasty with Brady, Peyton taking four different coaches to four Super Bowls.
I mean, all you have to look at is what Andrew Luck did before he got the crap beat out of him. Well, during getting the crap beat out of him with those awful defenses, and yep, he had a couple weapons, but what he was able to do with those Colts teams, he's paying the price for it now, and so is that franchise. But it was really, I think we're going to look back on it, just realize how incredible it was.
Yeah, well, I haven't sold my stock in Andrew Luck. It's down. You know what I mean? It's down from its peak, but I haven't sold it yet.
Apparently Josh McDaniels has.
I know. The report is he's going to take Tennessee over Indy, right?
Yeah. And only part of that is because of not trusting Luck's health. Part of it is the GM there, Robinson, is a former Patriots guy, so he knows him a little better.
Right. I liked that the Titans got rid of Mularkey, even though he won a playoff game. Like, I thought that was smart. He didn't maximize their offensive talent this year. We feel like we have enough offensive. We drafted a receiver in the top 10, a quarterback in the top two. We have a top five tight end in Delanie Walker. We have an insane amount invested in our offensive line, including probably the best tackle combination in the NFL. Certainly a top three offensive line in terms of tackles, and in a top five offensive line in terms of overall. We have huge investments in running back, and our offense wasn't good this year. Offensive-minded head coach, you got to go. I'm sorry. I love that aggression, even though they won a playoff game.
So this is the end of exotic Smash Mouth.
I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do. Because Derrick Henry doesn't strike me as a modern running back in terms of his ability to catch the ball. But Derrick Henry and their ability to run the ball this year wasn't their problem. So I don't know how much they'll change it.
I don't think he's a lead back. As much as for certain times of the fantasy season I wanted him to be, I think he's like LeGarrette Blount plus. That's pretty much what he is. Maybe slightly better vision.
Yeah,
but he's fine. Like, he's a guy you still need somebody else with him.
Yeah, I think most running backs need someone else with them. The Le'Veon Bell yesterday was just remarkable. Like, I know we're going spraying around here, but how running backs have impacted teams early on is why Saquon Barkley is going to be a top five pick, and I don't think that there's any reason for him not to be.
I'm so interested to see how many running backs go first round, because there's some solid running. Geis is going to be a first rounder. It's just a matter of where.
Yeah, but you've got what do you think the Cowboys would do if they had to redraft Jalen Ramsey or Ezekiel Elliott?
Oh, I think they take Jalen Ramsey.
So do I. But they were built for, but I mean, they won 12 games in a playoff bye with Zeke, and they were built for a running back to try to help Romo, right? And then ultimately ended up being Dak Prescott, and he had one of the best rookie seasons a running back's ever had. So I think you're right that it would be Jalen Ramsey, but it's not like Ezekiel Elliott was a bad pick for the Cowboys.
Really, the bigger question is, what if Jerry Jones just didn't have that much of an ego, took Jalen Ramsey, and then didn't take Jalen Smith? Jalen Smith, great story, but when you objectively look at his situation, there's no reason he should have been taken early in the second round, because he's pretty much one of those guys that can only go forward now, already in his career, and teams just abuse him when Sean Lee's out of the game.
312-644-6767. Yeah, that was a big step back for them. Texters are writing in, if Trubisky ends up being on that level, do we have any idea if Pace is going to be able to build it around? No, the Bears roster is nowhere near as good as the Jaguars roster right now. Like, that is still, the jury's out. But that's why you have your quarterback. Now you can start using your draft capital on the support staff, offensively and defensively. The Bears' defense is closer to being great than their offense is closer to being great, obviously, which is why big part of me, I obviously take best player available. Big part of me wants them to go defense at 8, even though they got to support Trubisky with so much. Like, your defense might be a player or two away from legitimately being top 5. So if you can find a guy that goes out and, like, completes the defense, for lack of a better term, with the top 10 pick, I'm there for it. They need another pass rusher, and they need to not have as much turnover in the secondary. So whether it's Jackson from Iowa, the corner, or it's Fitzpatrick from Bama, or if, you know, Bradley Chubb somehow fell from NC State. Did you see, by the way, that Cleline Farrell went back to Clemson? Number 99, the big DN.
That seems like a bad decision. I mean, who knows what the other circumstances are, but on just the football level, that seems like a really bad decision.
Everyone says leader of the team, great kid, great head on his shoulder, spoke highly about his degree. He was the one who volunteered to go in and meet the media at the press conference after they lost in the college football playoff, to be accountable for it. Like, everything about him reads like he's just a great kid and all that, but lock first round pick, borderline top 10 pick, can't prove any more than he did this year on a great team, and is going back to school. If he gets injured, it'll just be crushing, because you can't help your draft stock any more than he did.
Right. It's one of those, you always hear the draft guys say, if you're a first round pick, maybe even if you're considered top 50, you go.
Yeah. And I really think he's top 10. I really think that he was a top half of the first round talent, and he's going back. I know people get crazy when I talk about Clemson, but it's just, he was in line for the Bears. Like, he was right in that range. He was not like one of the top two edge guys, but he was absolutely would have been on the Bears board. And he announced just yesterday that he would be going back to school. I thought that was just a crazy decision. But we'll talk about the Bears building in the mold of these other teams that are still alive in the Final Four, and we'll play a little game of who did it best on one of the craziest moments that we've seen in a long time in sports. It's Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I just saw a highlight in the studio of the Antonio Brown catch again, the one in the back of the end zone. What do you think, like, if I was going to just throw superlatives of Antonio Brown at you, Campy, okay? Tell me when I've said one that you disagree with, all right? You understand the game?
Yep.
One superlative will be bigger than the next. You tell me when I've gone too far on it. Antonio Brown is the best wide receiver in football. Antonio Brown is a future Hall of Famer. Antonio Brown has a chance to go down as the second best wide receiver in the history of the sport.
That's one I just would have to look, because I would still probably take Randy Moss.
So would I. Because I think I did it deliberately that way. Because I think the first two, at this point, you can't really debate.
Not at all.
Like, I think his five-year... This is Antonio Brown's last 5 years, okay? over 100 catches every year, over 1,200 yards every year, 8 or more touchdowns every year, 52 touchdowns, 7,800 yards, 582 catches in 5 seasons. Age 24 through 29, albeit, yes, with a Hall of Fame quarterback. And you would say, oh, wow, that sounds like it might be unprecedented, modern era football. Here's Randy Moss's first 6 seasons of his career. This is how he started his career. Only had over 100 catches twice. Again, Antonio Brown's done it 5 straight times. And the other 4 years, he had less than 85 catches each time. But he had 8,400 yards and 77 touchdowns. 77 touchdowns in his first 6 years in the league. Antonio Brown, who's been unquestionably the best receiver in football the last 5 years, only has 52 touchdowns. So to match that 6-year start to Randy Moss's career, and again, these are not the first 5 years of Antonio Brown's career. He's been in the league, like, he's 29 years old. He's been in the league 8 years, I think. He would need to have a 25-touchdown season next year to be on that Randy Moss pace. So I don't think he's catching Moss. Like, he's over 100 touchdowns short of Randy Moss right now for the whole career. But T.O.? Marvin Harrison? Chris Carter?
I could see him being in that tier.
Right? Like, I think that's what we're looking at. I think we're looking at, if tier one is Jerry Rice by himself, and then there's a 1B that is Randy Moss, and then there's tier two, and it's those, it's Chris Carter, T.O., Marvin Harrison, Larry Fitzgerald, in terms of modern era wide receivers?
Yeah, I would think so.
I think Antonio Brown is there, basically. Like, this 5-year run of dominance puts him there. And I think he's a Hall of Famer if he retired tomorrow. And he won't retire tomorrow, obviously. And he's going to get a few more years of prime, and then we'll see how he ages. And if he ages like Larry Fitzgerald playing in this era, he's got a chance to shatter records. Like, he's got to be up on, like, where T.O. and Tony Gonzalez and those guys are on the all-time reception list. He is just an absolutely ridiculous player. A.J. Bouye hadn't given up a touchdown all season, had perfect coverage on him, and gave up that TD twice. Just insanely impressive. And, of course, in a loss. Let's get an update.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you, Julie DeCaro. I'm Danny Parkins in solo today. Spiegel will be back tomorrow. Brought to you by Think About Your Eyes. Seeing is a gift that needs protecting with yearly eye exams. Find a doctor near you at thinkaboutyoureyes.com and make an appointment today. While Antonio Brown was remarkable yesterday, he was overshadowed by one play by Stephon Diggs and the greatest play in Minnesota Vikings history and one of the great plays in NFL postseason history, never a walk-off touchdown before in the history of the NFL playoffs. I want to play a little game here of who did it best, because I have not heard 2 of these 3 calls. And I thought Joe Buck nailed it. For a guy who sometimes is a little understated and fairly polarizing as a broadcaster, so Campy, play that one first. We have the Westwood 1 call, which is Kevin Harlan, who's amazing. We have Paul Allen, the local call, who is considered one of the best local radio play-by-play voices in the game. And then, of course, Joe Buck, one of the voices of football and Fox. So let's do it this way. Let's do Buck, then Harlan, then Paul Allen. And this, we're going to relive the Stephon Diggs, Case Keenum 61-yard miracle. And we'll play a little game together. You can vote on the text line 670-11 of who did it first. This from Joe Buck on Fox.
Steps into it, passes, caught, Diggs, sideline, touchdown, unbelievable, Vikings win it.
That's good. That's pretty good. He got excited, he gave you who it was, told you where it was, that the sideline might come into play on the review there, gave you the voice crack on the unbelievable, which, not like McDonough, because he only did it once and he did it on a play that actually deserved a voice crack.
It's the trend lately.
It is the trend. It is the trend. And then he laid out and was silent for a while after it. Good call by Buck. A very, very strong call. Friend of the show, Joe Buck. hey, friend of the show, all of these guys. They've all been on the show in the current version of Spiegel and Parkins. Kevin Harlan was just on 10 days ago or so. Let's hear Kevin Harlan on Westwood One.
Shotgun snap. He moves up. He moves up. He throws a long line drive on the near side. Leaping to a catch made. It's made by, oh my goodness, it's going to go in for the touchdown. Grabbed by Diggs. He broke a tackle. 61-yard touchdown throw. The Vikings have won. The Minnesota Vikings have won.
Good excitement, right? That's good excitement. That's capturing the moment. But can you give it to me again? Does he say grabbed by, oh my goodness? I don't think
Shotgun snap. He moves up. He moves up. He throws a long line drive on the near side. Leaping to a catch made. It's made by, oh my goodness.
It's made by, oh my goodness. And then he gave me digs on the back end once he got into the end zone. All right.
That guy's 40. Was so good, oh my goodness.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Underrated. Came out of nowhere. Pat Shurmur. It's Pat Shurmur. Unbelievable coach that guy is. Could have been with the Bears. All right. I have very high hopes for this Paul Allen touchdown call. He's so good. Crowning moment of his broadcasting career is that call. At home, home building. Let's hear it.
Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Caught by Diggs.
Stay up.
Oh, my God.
Loose. Oh, my God.
Hey. 30.
No.
10. Touchdown. Are you kidding me? It's a Minneapolis miracle. Stephon Diggs and the Minnesota Vikings have locked up on the New Orleans Saints. It's a 61-yard Minneapolis miracle.
Whoo. That's awesome. What? Who's this play-by-play guy or the color guy again?
Pete Bursich.
Pete Bursich. We've had him on too. All right. Honesty time here. Do we think that Paul Allen is mad at Pete Bursich for stepping on that call?
A little bit.
You think just a little bit? I don't know anything about Paul Allen and if he would be petty about that and how much he would personally care. I have no idea. But I know he goes on with Mully and Hamley somewhat regularly, and I would love an answer to the question of if he's mad about Bursich stepping on his call.
Did you note that he made sure to say Minnesota Miracle a second time at the end?
Of course I noted that. That's tremendous vocal range for a Paul Allen. Keeping it that level again to give it the punctuation because Minneapolis Miracle got stepped on the first time, so he said it again. I want that one more time, Campy. I want Paul Allen with Pete Bursich one more time, and I want you guys to be answering the question, is Paul Allen mad that Pete Bursich got in the way and stepped on his call?
Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Caught by Diggs.
Stay up!
Oh, my God! Loose.
Oh, my God!
30!
No!
10! Touchdown! Are you kidding me? It's a Minneapolis miracle! Stephon Diggs and the Minnesota Vikings have locked up on the New Orleans Saints. It's a 61-yard Minneapolis miracle.
Yeah, Paul Allen 1, Joe Buck 2, Kevin Harlan 3. We in agreement on that?
100%.
That seems pretty clear to me, I think. Paul Allen, easy 1, Joe Buck, easy 2. Harlan, still good, but caught by, oh my goodness, and yeah, that... Yeah, I think he would. I think Harlan would admit that comes in at number 3. Texter just sent something in that was interesting. Parkins, why are you having trouble admitting that it wasn't that Diggs made a great play? It was that the guy on the Saints made a bad play. Classic idea of like, did the Vikings win or did the Saints blow it? Marcus Williams made an all-time blunder. All-time. He had a great rookie season, a part of a great rookie class, and he now is known for that. He was overshadowed by Alvin Kamara, and he was overshadowed by Marshawn Lattimore, and he was a relatively anonymous player who had only missed 6 tackles all year in 90 attempts, according to Pro Football Focus, and he led the team in interceptions this year, and he had an interception earlier in that game that led to a touchdown drive. Like, he is a legitimately good foundational piece of their secondary who now is known for trying to avoid a pass interference and take out his legs, and his coaches let him down because for some reason they had a guy guarding the sideline 5 yards away as opposed to having more people back. And he is a goat of epic proportions. And he disabled his comments on his Instagram page because idiots were sending him some of the most vile, mean things that you could possibly imagine. And sports fans, we talked about it earlier, with the guy throwing his TV out the window and yelling at his wife or girlfriend or significant other to not ask him to do the dishes because he was going to kill himself. Like, people go way too far on all this stuff.
Don't ask me to do nothing!
Yeah, that guy. So I have no problem assigning blame to Marcus Williams, of course. Of course. But the Vikings are the bigger story of that game, right? We're in agreement that a team in a franchise that hasn't won a Super Bowl that could host the Super Bowl at home with a fan base that is accustomed to soul-crushing defeats walks off in the NFL playoffs, which has never been done before on a touchdown in the history of the sport, and advances, so hosting a Super Bowl in their home stadium is a dream that is still alive. We're in agreement that the positive spin of that story is the bigger story than a missed tackle by a rookie safety that none of you had heard from before that game who still will have a very good career. Doesn't mean that Marcus Williams isn't part of the story. It's just not the bigger story. And if you focus on that part of it, I guess I don't know what you're in it for. Like, it's an all-time blunder. No question. But he's not a bad player. He's not a bad guy. He made a mistake as a rookie in a huge game, in a huge spot, and he'll be remembered for it for the rest of his life. But I don't know if, I don't know how, in the moment you watch it and you see it and it's unbelievable that he takes out his own guy, sure. But the Vikings still being alive the next day, to me, is absolutely the bigger story. We'll transition in 20 minutes. A story kept creeping up from over the weekend, and it's going to be here for a while, and I am totally here for it. It's Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Spiegel and Parkins on the Score. Need legal advice by a reputable attorney? Send questions you want answered to cbschicago.com/legal advice and look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. That is cbschicago.com/legal advice. Probably seen the Diggs play 40 times. Just being online and in a sports studio and watching the replays of it yesterday. That's why we do this, man. It's why we waste time and miss family obligations for sports for moments like that. It was so incredible.
Yeah. Like, do you I remember exactly where I was to bring it to the Bears. The two consecutive weeks in 2001, the Mike Brown plays. I remember exactly where I was for both of those.
Nice.
Like, just incredible individual moments.
Yeah.
Of just how improbable it was.
What a great season he had that year.
God, the
I don't remember where I was for each of those moments, but that it's funny you say, like, in terms of, like, the level of play that you have to go to as a Bears fan. You're like, oh yeah, Mike Brown pick six. That's a remember where you were moment.
Same with the comeback in the Arizona game in the Super Bowl year. I think those are the only things that I can think of off the top of my head that could even come close to that within recent memory.
Where you remember where you were?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you're not a Cubs fan, so for me, I had a few of those moments. Like, I'll always remember where I was when Montero hit the grand slam against the Dodgers. That blew my mind because I had the ability to have tickets to come in, but I had a charity event in Kansas City that me and the guys of the show were being honored at after the Chiefs drafted Tyreek Hill, and we did a bunch of stuff for a domestic violence shelter. So we're like, we can't come in. So we watched that in the lobby of the hotel where the event was, and I just remember, like, going absolutely insane in a suit and tie and, like, not, and then giving a little speech and the whole thing just being ridiculous.
Just because I'm not a Cubs fan doesn't mean I don't remember, because I believe I was on highlights that night.
Okay.
Like, I know I was on the board for the Lester squeeze bunt. Wasn't that against the Mariners?
Yeah, okay, but you said you don't remember where you were. Those were the only ones you remembered in recent history where you were in terms of, like, as a sports fan. You're not a fan of the Cubs, so you remember because it was a year or two ago, and you have a memory that hasn't been completely polluted by lifestyle choices. So, you know, you're in that type of spot. But, yeah, there's a few of them out there, and that play yesterday was just as good as it gets when it comes to sports. Speaking of the Cubs, by the way, I'm here for a year of Bryce Harper rumor and innuendo. I don't know how much or how closely you were following Cubs convention stuff, but on the kids panel, where kids ask the questions to the players. They were asked, like, one kid asked, what's your favorite board game? And,
Ooh. Well,
you're thinking about what your favorite board game is. I'm telling you a story, Campy. The answer is Clue. No, someone was like Monopoly or whatever. And Chris Bryant goes, whatever game Bryce picks out. Like, it was just Theo made mention of it. Theo referenced it. KB mentioned it a couple of times. Rizzo mentioned it. It came up during the opening ceremony Friday night, the thing that Dempster was hosting. Like, they know that they're trolling. Like, KB was like, Bryce enjoys it more, so he puts it out there. And then they're like, well, you put it out a couple of times too. He's like, you're right. I think it's pretty funny. Like, they want to play together. They're friends, and they love putting it out there. And the Cubs are going to have money, and they're not going to go over the tax for this year. So I am here for a season-long coronation of two stories, two goals. Win this World Series, and then welcome Bryce Harper next year. So you thought I was insufferable this year as a Cubs fan. Woo-wee. Wait till we start getting your weekly Bryce Harper updates.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was one of those guys, I would do the exact same thing. I would troll every bit of and it doesn't even have to be just Chicago. If Bryce has some sort of connection with someone on whatever other team it is, I'd do the exact same thing there too.
Yeah, but the only way this backfires, like Chris Bryant has would you agree that he has the best image of any athlete in the city?
Probably.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe Taves, but he's going down right now, but like maybe Taves. Multiple-time champion, captain, the whole thing.
Yeah, that's it. That's probably the list.
But that's probably the list, right? And obviously more fans of Chris Bryant than Taves because of Cubs fandom over Hawks fandom. But it makes me think that it's going to happen. Because what if Bryce Harper signed with the Cardinals? You know what I mean? Like, people would turn on Chris Bryant a little bit for teasing him. Now, they wouldn't dislike him, obviously, but it just doesn't strike, like, he's very cautious, he's very calculated. What he puts out there is always very pristine and, you know, corporate, for lack of a better term.
Bland,
yeah, for maybe a better term. So it would really surprise me if he is attaching himself to this as boldly and publicly as he is, even with his tongue firmly implanted in cheek. It would just surprise me if, Bryce is leaving the Nationals and he's signing with the New York Yankees. I'd be like, really?
If he did that to the Cardinals, I would have to switch spots with Jay for the day, because one, I would love to hear what everybody was going to say, and Jay would not want to hear a word of what anybody's going to say that's going to call in here.
No, it'd be ridiculous. And I mean, and Cubs fans would have to own it too. We'd have to wear it.
Oh yeah, for making it as big of a deal as it already has been made, and especially over the next year, it's only going to 10 times as much.
Yeah, it's only going to get bigger. Right, absolutely. But it'd be interesting to see how people would turn on Bryant a little bit for teasing him about it. It's just like it's a fun story to follow along. A bigger story, and I will legitimately say a bigger story, but one that will be much less fun to follow along with, that I am very interested in, is what Crane Kenny said about the Cubs broadcast rights at the convention. And he was saying, we're in a really good position. It's really good to be us, because he made it sound like, and it could have been negotiating, he said 80-20, they're going to go out and do it on their own. And that has huge ramifications, because right now they're partnered with the Reinsdorfs and NBC Sports Chicago, and they have the bundle with the White Sox and the Bulls and the Blackhawks and the Cubs all under one umbrella. And they want their own thing, because then they don't have to share. And like the Dodgers have their revenue, it can be theirs. But obviously there's cord cutting and people are worried about rights fees exploding and the eventual bursting of the bubble for live sports rights. But, and he's making the argument that these companies are acquiring one another. Like, you've got the the Fox Disney merger, and then you've got the AT&T Time Warner merger. And so he tried to present the argument, and we'll see if he ends up being right. He tried to present the argument that even though there are less players in the game, the players in the game are bigger. So that should drive up the rights for content, because he's like, Facebook's involved and Amazon's involved and, you know, all of these sorts of things. And it's a huge deal, because if the that is the last big frontier for the Cubs in terms of local revenue that they don't have to share, because they're a revenue-generating team, right? We know how it works in baseball. I think most baseball fans are well-versed enough in it to know that there's like six or eight teams that really generate a ton of revenue and profit, and then everybody else is a product of revenue sharing, and that's where some of the inequities come into baseball. And now there's this luxury tax that makes it a little bit harder to just throw money at the problem, but you're going to be more willing to pay the tax if you have more local revenue that you have that everybody else doesn't have to share, right? Like, that's the simplest way that I can lay it out. So nailing this deal is like, you know, Theo is a competitive advantage, right? Wrigley is a competitive advantage. Being a good team is a competitive advantage. But a lot of teams have smart executives, and a lot of teams are in great cities, and a lot of teams have cool tradition. Where you can have a real competitive advantage in this sport is if you have revenue that other teams don't have. So they're coming up in 2 years, and it's a huge deal for local rights. It's a huge deal for us as broadcast partners with the Cubs. It's a huge deal for their ability. Like, so you say, why do I care as a fan? The amount of money that they'll be able to spend on guys like Bryce Harper will largely be determined based on their ability and willingness and ability to execute this local revenue stream.
It's almost Crane Kenny's dream of, this is the biggest impact he can have on baseball ops.
No question.
The creativity with all the streaming options as well. It's going to be so interesting, because it feels like it's been a little bit since there's been this high profile of a team having their rights up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's... I mean, let me try to...
Dodgers have been a while. Rangers have been a while.
Oh, you're going all sports. I was going to do locally. Yeah, I mean, well, the Dodgers deal was the big one. That was the $8 billion that blew everyone's mind. It's probably the biggest local broadcast deal. Like, and this, I say this as a guy who works for the Score. Even like Cubs going from WGN to the Score, which was obviously huge. I mean, maybe the Blackhawks getting back on TV after their games were blacked out and they lost all of those fans. I mean, this is a massive local media story that has on-field and off-field ramifications. So, and it's going to play out as we let it play out. It's not like we have to wait two full years, because they don't want to go into the last year without a deal and a plan, because these things take a lot of time. Like, we'll probably get an answer over the course of this baseball season, and so if we get a figure by then, we'll be able to estimate a little bit better how much extra money they're going to have. They're going to have extra money. It's just a question of how much extra money the Cubs get going forward. We'll talk to Bernstein and Grody coming up on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.